We're exploring how architecture students immerse themselves in Milwaukee neighborhoods and what comes up in these interactions. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Field School at UW-Milwaukee School of Architecture and Urban Planning is like kind of like a story in progress, right? With local residents leading the way on civic consciousness and what neighborhood progress looks like through architecture. Join in on collaborations with universities on the Wisconsin Idea, 800-642-1234 to talk. Architect Arijit Sen is an associate professor at UW-Milwaukee, where he directs the Buildings, Landscapes, and Cultures program. Program explores how universities can work with underserved communities. Arijit, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you for having me. And also to Joe for all the work that he did behind the scenes.
Absolutely. Well, take us on a journey, if you will. What first piqued your interest in studying urban environments and communities as an architect?
I think if I go long back in my life, I grew up in at least 10 or 11 cities, so I never could call any place my home. And that probably made me more interested in figuring out what home and place and cities mean. I started doing architecture, been doing it for a long time. But also I'm from India. I've traveled across the multiple cities. So I've never felt at home or centered. And that is one of the reasons I've been searching for community. And that was the beginning of this project. This project wasn't a research project. This was simply me trying to find community. I walked in not knowing anything about Milwaukee's Northside neighborhoods. And I was just simply interested in knowing more and being part of it. This started in 2008 mm-hmm. when we started a program with Madison, UW-Madison's art history program and architecture program. And that was about field work. And we had taken in some of the ideas from archaeology field schools where, you know, you go into the physical environment and you read the physical environment to understand the values of people who made it, who lived in it, and who continue to live in it. But then the field school first happened in Madison, then we brought it to Milwaukee. But when we brought it to Milwaukee, I realized that working in a city, especially in the neighborhoods which have been historically disenfranchised, there is a certain ethical and moral component to what we do as a university. So we started with Thurston Woods and went to some neighborhoods, but by 2014, we were told by our collaborators that you should stay in one place, build relationships, and it's the time, the sense of time that produces the field work that we desire. So that's when, since then, we have been in Washington Park and Sherman Park, that area, and we continue to be there.
Have you found community there?
Yes, I did. There is an interesting story. When I first went in 2014, I was moving from the historic Watertown neighborhood to Washington Park. And at that point, we had thought that we are going to look at North Avenue, which is a kind of a central northern street in Milwaukee, around which the town grew. So Milwaukee, North Avenue was the north end of Milwaukee. So our goal was to see North Avenue as a transect, look at multiple neighborhoods, understand practices of stewardship and neighborhood community, and then be able to compare it. Because on the east side of Milwaukee, North Avenue was historic Watertown neighborhood, economically well off, mostly white neighborhood, and then on the other side, on the other end of it was Washington Park, which is mixed but mostly African American, Hmong, and economically not so well off. So we had finished Water Tower, and we were moving into. I was interested in doing Washington Park, so I walked into the artist Munir Bahauddin's studio just to kind of say that I like to do this. And Munir looked at me, he asked me two questions, which was central to how I have been working, what kind of impacted me. The first thing he asked me is, but these buildings were built for German working class folks, Washington Park in the early 20th century. They were not built for African-Americans, not built for us. So how are you going to understand our culture in this space that we occupy? And the second thing, he looked at me and he said, are you yet another intellectual carpetbagger? Mm. And basically what he was reminding me was the long history of the university coming in an extractive mode in these neighborhoods. And of course, at that point, I didn't know what the word carpetbagger means. And I said, you know, Munir, you'll have to figure out, I have to figure out what this word means. I don't know. But we stayed there. And the fact that we stayed there since 2014 has now, Munir is now one of my most trusted colleague, mentor, and teacher. Hmm. So, yeah, that is kind of what brought us to this point.
I really appreciate you telling that story, Arijit. I want to reintroduce you here. Arijit Sen, Associate Professor at UW-Milwaukee, where he directs the Buildings, Landscape, and Cultures program. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Arijit, can you explain some concrete examples, for instance, what students in the field school would be doing in these neighborhoods?
Yes, of course. First of all, when you work in a community, the issues that we deal with are not easy. And because they're not easy and simple as in a classroom, we have to be interdisciplinary. And my students really come from a variety of disciplines. They're not just architecture students. In fact, very few architecture students sometimes want to take this class because it's not fancy design. Mm. I have students from public history, from urban studies, from art practice, social practice of art, including people in MIAD, Marquette, and across the country. So these are history students who are interested in knowing what local history means. So those are the kind of people who come in. Originally it started with a summer field school. So basically what that meant was in summer, we would go and we would collect stories of people and places, because places do speak to us. Places talk about values of people whose histories are not written, who hasn't spoken, who are probably not there anymore. But there are people out there who also we collect oral histories with. The idea behind this summer program was that, listen, we don't want to get action. We're not solving any problems. People in the neighborhood know how to solve their problems. They've been doing this for years. Hmm. So the listening part, this deep listening part, was the summer program. That's how we started. But over time, what happened is it ballooned into the entire year. So in fall, I will take my architecture design studio there. Simone Ferro, who's teaches in the dance department at UWM, she would take a dance student. And occasionally there'll be MIAD professors who would be taking the art student to the neighborhood independently, not all together. And we would work on the stories that we collected in summer. That would include, from our part, some kind of installation project, art events, dance events. And the idea here we quickly realized is conversation is not just talk. Hmm. There are various forms of communicating with communities, and art and architecture and dance really bring in people in the neighborhood. So we'll do that in fall. And then it'll spill over into spring, where we'll have a research seminar where the students would, and a lot of the graduate, undergraduate, and doctoral students would together work on doing reports in forms that the community understands. That's very important in the field school, that we do not want to produce knowledge that our interlocutors, the people we work with, would not read. Hmm. So what we started doing is we started making zines, the small brochures and mm-hmm. magazines. And we would then take those zines back in summer, the next summer, and continue the conversation. Zines were basically summarizing what this people in the neighborhood had told us. So that's what happened. And it's now a continuous year-long thing. And it's been very, very interesting and exciting.
We have architect and architecture historian Arijit Sen in UW-Milwaukee School of Architecture and Urban Planning as we talk about the field school that he founded, how students interact with Milwaukee neighborhoods. Join in on cultural landscape studies, Milwaukee neighborhood partnerships, what you would love architecture students to do in your community. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Arijit Sen here on the Ideas Network. you're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. UW-Milwaukee architect Arijit Sen has spent over a decade teaching students in the Buildings, Landscapes, Cultures Field School, and they collect and they explore these stories of places and people and then turn those discoveries into community action. Your questions, 800-642-1234. Arijit Sen, an associate professor of architecture urban studies, stays with us. Now let's bring in two more people. Sherry Fuqua lives in Milwaukee's Sherman Park neighborhood, has worked to improve the housing conditions and help create a park that is Unity Orchard on 38th Street. Sherry, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kenny. Thank you for having me.
Hi. Yes. And we also have Camille Mays, also lives in Sherman Park, founded Peace Garden Project, working to beautify the neighborhood, create wellness for residents. Camille, welcome to you as well.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Camille, can we start with you? Tell us what the Sherman Park neighborhood is like. Take us to the neighborhood.
One thing that I love about our neighborhood, hello, Sherry.
hello to the neighbor.
Yeah, so I like Sherry being on here because me and Sherry are what I call super residents. And what we were very empowered. We were going to meetings and we were really tired of meeting just to meet. It's a lot of super residents here in Sherman Park and a lot of organizers here in this particular neighborhood. A lot of more than I could think of in any one neighborhood. Not to say that it's not work being done, but it's just a really concentrated number of organizers in our neighborhood. I see a connectivity going on in our neighborhood, especially since the unrest and everything after, just a more of a sense of community. Because I know me and Sherry, we were trying to work on the outdoor spaces prior to the unrest. And people were saying they just didn't feel safe. They just didn't want to do that. They didn't want to participate in anything like that because they wouldn't be able to utilize the spaces. And so we got to a point with the connecting of the organizer, the all hands on deck approach when we had a lot of violence in our community. And we worked together cohesively to get some things going in the neighborhood to get residents to the point where they wanted to organize, where they wanted to create spaces, where they wanted to meet and make changes in the neighborhood. So the Sherman Park community, I would say, is a very resilient community. We have a lot of violence in our particular community as well, compared to the city overall. And just to live and survive and not to just exist in that type of trauma is a lot. So I think we have a strength in our community and a lot of support.
I want to also acknowledge, as you talk about their violence and unrest, how some people think about Sherman Park, because it was in the summer of 2016 following the death of Sylville Smith, who was fatally shot by a Milwaukee Police Department. And we saw the burning of Sherman Park. And I'm wondering, Sherry, what has that time meant to you? And how have you seen Sherman Park perhaps change or not over these recent years?
Well, that's a good question. 2016, the unrest was a sad time in our community. Mm. But the thing is, the way I see it now, it has actually really built community. It has brought quite a few of us together that actually wouldn't actually came together. Beauty came out of that incident, where you can go up on Fond du Lac and see, you know, where the bank has stood. Now it is the Sherman Phoenix, and it is small businesses thriving. You do see different spaces, different healing spaces coming to the community, as what Camille does with the project that she brings to the community, the healing spaces. Other individuals that's coming out, working together to build community in the midst of tragedy. It's a beautiful thing. I hate that it took that to bring it to this point.
but it did build community in the midst of it all. And I just want to thank Arija and the students from the field school for coming in and knowing to actually to get to know individuals and build relationships, because a lot of individuals come into our community trying to figure out, you know, coming to try to save our community. It's so much going on in our community. We have the we know what we want in our community, so we don't need individuals to come and try to save us. Come and have some conversations and see what we actually want to see in our community, where we're going in our community, because it's already here inside of Sherman Park. And it's something because my community, my surrounding, my street actually divides two communities. You know, one side of the street, the east side of the street is Metcalf Park, and the west side is Sherman Park. Mm-hmm. And for years, it was so underserved by both. And I cannot say that for Sherman Park now, because Sherman Park, actually, we worked together to actually make a community. Because you're on the other side of the street, you're still my community. So whatever happens, what affects you, affects me on this west side of the street. So that dividing line, which the city put there, is so ironic, because why? Why did you choose to divide the street like that? And it actually it's a pulling mechanism on each side. But the bottom line is, it's community. We all have to work together.
Arijit, how has it been connecting with Sherry and Camille and the way they envision Sherman Park as they say, super residents?
Yeah, Sherry and Camille are not just our collaborators. For us, they have been our teachers, and I'll give you an example of what they have taught me and my students. The Sherman Park community is filled with duplex buildings. And duplex were a kind of buildings, on two flats on top of each other, was built in the 20th century by working class, mostly German immigrants, to be able to rent out the top and then live below and earn money. And that was called the American dream, kind of part of the American dream of owning property. And finally, they did move to the suburbs. But there's another form of hope. And that is the whole kind of hope James Baldwin talks of. And that's the hope of waking up every day despite difficulties and deciding to continue, deciding mm-hmm. to make a better world. That's what Sherry and Camille has taught us, to take a completely different look at the reality around us and how we engage with the world around us. So when I first met Camille, she wasn't very convinced that, you know, that we are gonna, like Munir, she was like, you know, you're just gonna be out of this place in a year or so. But what we learned, and this is the most important lesson I take back, is community engagement and learning from the world around us is not a right, it's a privilege that we have, and the world gives us all this knowledge. And that knowledge only comes to us if we stay there long enough to make connections. So working with Camille, we started finding all these other events and possibilities of engagement, stories that were being told, histories. One of the histories we learned was literally that story of the unrest after Civil Smith. People told us the press talks about that day of the unrest, but no one talks of the day after, where everyone in the community came out, young, old, black, white, and they picked up the threads and made their community a better place, that act of caring. Mm. So Sherry too, when we went to Sherry and the first interview we did with her, she talked about the orchard in front of her house and how she had put in a little library, and some kid put in firecrackers and the library cracked. And she gave it as an example of difficulties in her dreams. And then she said she wouldn't give up and she stayed there. And I know that Camille and Sherry has gone through real difficulties, real troubles, but it's their persistence, that form of hope that my students and I learned from them.
Camille, can you take us into that persistence and hope and how you keep striving in the neighborhood?
Now that's a tough one. Because I was just faced with, it's almost like working in a community, and I'm sure Sherry can relate, is doing the work is almost re-traumatizing because we are faced with so much violence and death, and we both had tremendous losses in the work that we do. So at times, I feel hopeless because I've lost my son, and we fought so hard to make changes in the city and Sherry as well. So often I feel discouraged. I feel hopeless a lot. And then we are often touted up and saying that our work is valued, but we don't always receive the funding or the support. And I'm having a hard time struggling with that, especially for people like us. You would think that we would get all the support after our losses. So it's very hard at times.
And
Same thing that brings us down is what keeps us moving.
I just want to pause right there with Camille Mays and Sherry Fuqua, who are change makers in the Sherman Park neighborhood. We'll pick this up after a news update on the Ideas Network. We're exploring the Field School at UW-Milwaukee this hour and the role of immersive community learning, what that means. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Field School takes students into neighborhoods to collect and explore stories of places, of placemaking. And then they have these ongoing interactions with local residents and business people and community leaders. Join in on this type of partnership and interaction, how you see it could take shape in your neighborhood, 800-642-1234. We have Camille Mays and Sherry Fuqua have collaborated with the program. They live in the Sherman Park neighborhood, and architect Arijit Sen founded the Field School with us for the hour. I'm wondering, Camille, if we could talk a little bit more about the Peace Garden project and the vision you see for healing spaces and what those healing spaces mean.
I think that it's very important to get your hands in the soil and your feet on the ground, because I think it contributes to grounding, getting your fingers in the dirt, and getting your hands in those chemicals. It boosts your serotonin scientifically. And so planting makes you happy inadvertently. And flowers are beautiful, just the sight of green. When it's green in offices and in spaces, people overall feel better. And so I think that in our communities, it's the broken windows theory. And I think it would be good. I think I call it environmental healing, because you change the environment. Just like when you dress better, you feel better. When you're in a healthy looking environment, you feel better and you're more inclined to take care of it. So with the healing spaces, me and Sherry and a lot of other people, we feel like when the community builds together, they could grow together. And so that's the act of Peace Garden Project, is planting peace and love in the community. It's healing justice on many levels. It's not just art and beautification. It's wellness. It's mindfulness. It's getting people connected to nature. So that is the overall gist of Peace Garden. And it's grown so much from just community gardens and beautification projects to mindfulness and wellness because of the trauma that I've been through and I've seen people around me go through. And so I've implemented sound healing and mindfulness into the work that we do.
Sherry, how do you see environmental healing? Because when you initially got involved, you surveyed your neighbors. What did they tell you?
Potentially, you know what, the neighbors, they just shared various things. The survey was, you know, asking them what they would want to see in the community. Again, because we have so many individuals that come into our community thinking, you know, they know what we need and what we want from the outside looking in. So with surveying the neighbors, actually, it was just a small survey, you know, what was important to them from 1 to 5, and it was housing, safety, beautification, education, and food and justice. And actually, it was one other, and it was landlord-tenant issues. And it's something, because outside looking in, just looking at some of the properties that with individuals that we're living in, there's some kind of dilapidated state that, you know, you would think that, you know, landlord tenant portion would be number one or in safety. But, you know, after talking to individuals and seeing what's really important, it really came down to safety. And landlord tenant was on the bottom because sometimes, you know, you just want a place for you and your family to stay. Mm. You just want a place what you can call home, you know, and employment and that kind of tripped me out. Because I'm like, Lord, you know, what we think important, what's important to me may not be important to the next individual. And safety was top of the charts. Beautification. And that's actually how some of the spaces came about. And it's ironic that, you know, we have a few spaces that we can actually come and build community in. And it's a couple of the number one space, which is Unity, Unity Orchard. It actually brought, it dealt with the food injustice. And we have trees, apples and pears and peaches. And it's something that this year, it actually, we're starting right now. We when we planted it, we didn't, you know, it educated us at the same time. We didn't get educated, but right now we're educated on how to actually prune the trees.
Prune, uh-huh.
And make it happen. So we're seeing it now. You know, it took a couple of years for us to get to this point, but now we're getting the fruit of our labor and seeing how the trees blossom down the line and the children and the youth just jump in and make it happen. And some of the students from the field school just jump right in. It's like, you guys need water. And they came through the pandemic. And actually, one of the students had already graduated. Mm-hmm. And he and a couple of his friends, they came through the pandemic and built a rain catcher with rain barrels. The youth came out and painted all the rain barrels.
Oh.
And they came and built this. It's beautiful. I know I'd call it a trellis. I don't know what to call it, but it actually sits in the back of the orchard, and it actually feeds. Like, we get the water to water our trees, to take to gain this fruit and things. And it's a space where we can actually have meetings, where we all come out and can have relationships with each other.
Oh.
It's a beautiful thing.
Oh, wow.
And to just touch on one other thing, so the students did quite a few renderings, and, you know, the community got together, and they actually listened to us. They actually got these renderings. And, you know, it's so many that we can bring to our community. It's so many different spaces that we can actually take these renderings, what these students and the community came, and actually put them into play and build them. I don't know where the renderings are at the Regent, but it's some things that we actually need to bring to fruition in our neighborhood, and actually we can take our neighborhood and help heal our neighborhood in different housing and different spaces where we can come together and make it happen, because it's needed in our community. So how can we take what we did in the past and bring it to fruition right now with those renderings? Why are they? What can we do?
Arijit, go ahead.
The renderings are with me. But I have to say, when Jared came in and built the rain water system, this is after he'd graduated. And in fact, two other students came in, and I have to admit online, on a radio, that one of the students I gave a bad grade. And then he came back to build this. And I was like, man, I made a big mistake. Mm-hmm. He had learned, he knew what he was doing. I just didn't see that. But anyway, once that thing got done, Sherry's Unity Orchard, we started dreaming, the students and Sherry and the neighbors started dreaming big. They want to have a stage. We are working on that. And, you know, really everything comes down to money, frankly. There is lots of money. It's not like there is no money. There's tons of money. Money doesn't reach the people who are doing real stuff in the neighborhood. Mm. So what would be wonderful is if people like Sherry, people like Camille, get the money to do what they're doing. So the renderings are with me and they're safe.
I'm going to reintroduce you all here for just a moment and then take a caller. Arijit Sen, Associate Professor at UW-Milwaukee, where he directs the Buildings, Landscapes, and Cultures Program. Sherry Fuqua and Camille Mays, they're residents in Milwaukee's Sherman Park neighborhood. As we look at these collaborations, 800-642-1234. Matt is joining us from Milwaukee. Matt, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Good morning. I have participated in the Sherman Park program, and Arjit will know me as a business person, and it's real good timing that I'm on right now, because Arjit was talking about money and funding, and there has been so much money spent on developing Milwaukee. You know, in the downtown area, there's been billions of dollars spent in the last decade that, you know, just between Northwestern's building and the arena and the Deer District and all that. And in our area, like North Avenue, just the only development of note has been the St. Anne Intergenerational Center, which was developed by Sister Lonergan. My problem is access to funds for quality projects. It's just, there's no support. And there are some other areas that get support, like the West End neighborhood has Marquette and Aurora and Miller and Harley-Davidson support. And
but you don't see the same opportunities as those neighborhoods. Arjit, I was wondering if you could jump in here on what the business community feels.
Yes, and hi, Matt. Matt was the person who let us in and gave us a space to work through during our field school. Yes, the business community, there is a lot of entrepreneurs in Sherman, in the Sherman Park neighborhood, certainly in the centerpiece area that I work with. Those entrepreneurs, usually the way money comes into Sherman Park is through the bid and NID district. So, you know, there is a particular channel through which money flows. And it's really hard for local, very, very hyper-local entrepreneurs to get that kind of money. Oftentimes it includes, sometimes grants includes elaborate grant-making, skills. Just recently, there was a grant for healing and Camille had sent in stuff. But, you know, it was kind of like asking for who owns the space, what's the space. So there are technical things that are required by the city, which oftentimes people on the ground fail. And that's where we come in as university. Matt discussed the West Side Neighborhood Association, which was produced by Marquette and other industry. And I actually put a challenge to UWM. We are already there in Sherman Park. Why cannot UWM invest in the same way Marquette does in the West Side neighborhood? So there is a little bit of responsibility that lies with us, that is academics, and with the city in rethinking the ways we do development and revitalization and funding and so on.
I want to pause right here with Camille and Sherry before we have to let you go. And I want you to be able to express how the city could better support your neighborhood or what you want to see as next steps. Camille, you go first.
I have so much to say, but so little. I will say, I think that it needs to be better strategic planning. I think it needs to be more hands on deck as far as the city. It's not just the responsibility of OBP to come out with the community and engage. I think it needs to be more engagement and interactions because the residents are starting to feel like elected officials just don't care. And I'm starting to understand those sentiments. It's a lot of things in the city that just seem like all out neglect. I think it should be more participatory processes between the residents and the city, maybe even down the line, a sort of advisory council. Maybe they can work with OVP to provide support because it's only a few of them. And then I also would love, it's what's beyond me or what I'm having a hard time struggling to understand is how this city got $400+ million. And I'm not understanding why it's not enough funding to go to VCOPS, where it was no funding before, where it's not enough to go to all of the organizations, top down and grassroots. I'm just not understanding why it's going to always be the people doing the work need to get the support. And until I see that, I'm going to say that it's not just me, it's Sherry, and it's a lot of other people. It's not about me and my funding. It's not a cry for or a fight for funding. It should be spread across the board. Larger organizations that are getting these fundings, they should be collaborating with little guys and little people and supporting them. Because what the city and organizations, they're not showing they want to work together because they're not doing it. It's very easy to do. And so that's what I have to say.
Sherry, what's coming up for you?
Well, Camille said a mouthful. I mean, you can just drop the mic behind what she just said, truly. The grassroots organizations that's out here doing the work, it really, with me, you know, it makes me just want to fall back sometimes, you know, because, you know, it seems like we're going so heavy. We've been through so much, and we're going so hard to build community. But when I look at the youth faces, when they come knock on the door and asking about the summer program and how they can get employment and things, I can't fall back because it's my community. But when you reach for help and you can't get the help that you need to sustain, that's a problem. It's a problem. And it's so, just like Camille just shared, it's so, the money is coming to our communities, but it's not actually trickling down to the individual that's doing the work. And how about let's collaborate? How come let's make it happen? How come we actually have to... Camille said it all. I don't want to go in, but I could.
Well,
but it's pointless at this point. I don't know.
Sherry and Camille.
Triggering.
Thank you. Camille, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Camille Mays, a resident of the Sherman Park neighborhood in Milwaukee, founder of the Peace Garden Project. Sherry Fuqua also lives in Milwaukee's Sherman Park neighborhood, where she has also worked to improve the housing conditions. UW-Milwaukee School of Architecture and Urban Planning Associate Professor Arijit Sen stays with us, founded its field school. Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're discussing the field school at UW-Milwaukee and its School of Architecture and Urban Planning. Another way they talk about the field school is that it's conserving local cultural heritage through collaborative teaching, engagement, and interpretive research. Maybe you've had a hand in this or seen it in action. Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Architect and field school founder Arijit Sen is with us for about five more minutes. Let's bring in Ruth now in Madison with a question. Hi, Ruth, go ahead.
Hi, it's so impressive to hear Camille and Sherry and Arijit talk about the Field School in Milwaukee. And I was wondering, Arijit, if you could talk more about expanding these efforts for immersive community learning throughout the state. I know you've got some efforts to be doing that in the near future.
Ruth, thank you for that.
Yes, thank you, Ruth. First, before I go there, I have to say that Camille and Sherry do have organizations and people can support it. One is Peace Garden MKE. Peace Garden Project MKE. The other one is the Middle Ground MKE. Both of them are organizations that these two individuals work on. So Ruth, to answer the question, I think what happened is the success of the model, which is basically humanities work. And oftentimes people would ask me, so what does it do? How is it successful? How do you evaluate this thing? Does it make change? We have discovered that humanities can make a huge change. It's not instantaneous change. It is a long-term kind of process of collaboration and conversation. Wisconsin Humanities picked it up. And we also had, I was thankful that there was someone as foresighted as Dina Wurzel, who's the executive director, who herself believed in the notion of place and people working in a local situation to solve their own problems, and the role of Wisconsin Humanities as a grant-giving organization to empower those people. So we started the community-powered project, which you can go into Wisconsin Humanities. We have a webpage now. It's ready. We are set to go. And the project involves basically connecting with four community-engaged librarians in four different towns in the country, in the state, Spooner, in this year it's Spooner, the Forest County Pottawatomie in Crandon, Appleton, and Racine. And then Wisconsin Humanities hires four young undergraduate students who've just graduated. One of them actually is a PhD student. That's another story. And we pay them for a year to use the field school methods, which is essentially humanities and public history methods, a little bit of architectural history too, and cultural resource management methods, and work with the librarian and the community out there to come up with some kind of action. Now that action is interesting because it's humanities. That action is not a project. We don't build something and then evaluate the building is good. We make sure that our conversation is sustained, that civic engagement sustains over time. So what we don't know what the projects are gonna be. It could be anything from a podcast to a garden to a installation, but ultimately that's spreading it out across the state. And I'm really excited that the Wisconsin Humanities has really recognized the power of the humanities to make incredible change in our world.
Mm. Ruth, does that pique your interest?
It really does. I'd love to hear more about how the communities got selected and if there is the possibility of that continuing on in the future.
Yes, we'd love to continue. The goal is to keep this continuing, to make it into a program which is independent. The communities really got selected by looking at libraries. Really, that's the last frontier that we have with real public space, publicly funded. Anyone can walk in, strangers welcome. So we looked at public as social infrastructure, as Eric Linenberg would point out. And what we did is we looked at some of the librarians across the state who are incredibly engaged in the community. And they are not just keeping books. They're inviting young adults to come in. They're inviting ethnic minorities to be part of it. They're looking at intergenerational work. So that's the kind of work a lot of our libraries are doing, public libraries. And so we went and that's how we started. We identified public libraries who are doing this wonderful work. And we empowered them. Not just with money, we had some money from the VDIC, from Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Mm-hmm. We also got money from the DNR, the Department of Instructions. Mm-hmm. But these trained young individuals are the resources. And we hope mm-hmm. that they will actually be able to fund themselves for additional years. And this will be a long-term project. But yes, next year, we hope to have more libraries in more cities.
Oh, Arijit, we'll be watching. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Arijit Sen, an associate professor of architecture, history, and urban studies at UW-Milwaukee, where he directs the Buildings, Landscapes, Cultures Field School project exploring how universities can work with their communities. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.